My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for him in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating, and the video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he is still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome to the program. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice on where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Welcome, TECN-TV, as well as all across our radio and social media networks as well. Be sure and get tuned in at ChosenGenerationRadio.com, ChosenGenerationRadio.com. You can also get signed up for the podcast, because as soon as we get done each hour, it automatically loads into the podcast system. So iHeart, iTunes, TuneIn, Podchasers, Podcaster, Deezer, Spotify, all those are all given the program, and so your feed can have those. Just go to listen and click on the link for your particular feed and get signed up. In addition to that, a lot of the programs, as we do video, You can watch on our Rumble link as we upload those as well. Well, big program today. Bottom of hour number two here, next hour, we'll be live in India with a service for our orphans, and looking forward to that. Senator Ted Harvey joins us top of the next hour to talk a great deal about the debate and what happened with that last night, as well as the interview with Tucker and President Trump. Luke Macias is with us to talk about the attack against Ken Paxton in Texas and really to expose the truths and the myths behind that. And joining me right now, though, is a gentleman who has regularly joined us here on Chosen Generation Radio. Always excited to have him with us. Christian Watson joins us. Christian, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we were talking a bit about the debate last night, and I know our topic also is the Georgia indictment, which I talked about yesterday, too, with David Shostokas, our constitutional attorney. And David is representing Reverend Stephen Lee. Reverend Lee is one of the indictees in that Georgia debacle, which really is an assault on our constitutional republic on a number of levels. And we were talking in the green room about the Constitution and really, as much as I could stomach the debate last night, and I did you watch the whole thing?
Oh, I watched the whole thing, and I live streamed it on my YouTube channel, too. And I even stayed 20 minutes afterwards to give my commentary. So, yeah, I was in it for the long haul.
Oh, my gosh. And then how many showers did you have to take after that?
I tell you, I was actually – there were times during the debate where my mouth stood agape, and I was just so shocked, and I just shook my head because I just couldn't muster up the words to respond to whatever was happening. That's how bad it was in some parts.
There were just points that were, just horrendous. I mean, I appreciated some of the things that Vivek had to say last night. I thought that he made some good points. I was just between you and I mean, I was disappointed in what he said about Vietnam, because that is unfortunately a misunderstanding of a younger generation of what Vietnam actually was about. And if you understand the disinformation campaign that was put together by the Russians back then you would understand what Vietnam truly was about. And it was about stopping the advance of communism in Southeast Asia. That's what it was about. Unfortunately, they used it, and I had a conversation earlier this week. Man, I'm a little off track with this, but conversation about McCarthy, because the other piece that goes with that is the misunderstanding about who Joe McCarthy was and what he did. Mm-hmm. And the truth about Joe McCarthy is that McCarthy was right about the infiltration of communism at every level. And Edwin R. Murrow was a card-carrying communist. And he's the one who was most responsible for ending McCarthy's hearings.
Yeah, well, I think that there are a lot of Americans who have a misunderstanding of some of these important areas of American history, whether it be the sort of anti-communist surge in the 50s, where McCarthy obviously had a very big role, or Vietnam. Although I think that there's a valid question to be asked. Yeah, Vietnam was definitely to stop the spread of communism. But American international affairs over the past 50, 60, 70 years has been dictated by the goals of globalists that are off our shores, the UN, the Atlantic Council, NATO, who oftentimes don't have our interests and believe that America doesn't come first, but their own interests come first. And then they try to get us to enforce the sort of liberal international order, the sort of golden arches theory of engagement, where if you have a McDonald's in every single country, that would supposedly cause war not to happen. Well, the exact opposite happens. you have McDonald's in every single country, and that gives the United States even more incentive to use geopolitical wrangling to maintain their hegemony over the rest of the world. And I think Vivek really touched on a nerve when he mentioned that, you know, it's not our job to be the world policeman, because it's not. America has had a bad habit of doing that. I understand the thinking behind it. I mean, I know Dennis Prager one time said, if America's not the world's policeman, who will be? And I understand that perspective, but my thing is, my thinking behind that is, America first and foremost has an obligation to its citizens and an obligation to its sovereignty. Anything else is secondary and should directly implicate its citizens and its sovereignty if America is to get involved. And personally, I don't think fighting foreign, far-off wars while folks suffer here at home is going to strengthen our sovereignty or strengthen our people. In fact, it does the exact opposite.
The problem is that the assumption is that the two are counterintuitive, and they're not. And we can use fancy words to describe that, but the reality is that America does not live. We tried isolationism, and isolationism is a fail. Isolationism does not work. There has to be a balance. And yes, you're right. We are at home absolutely 100% failing. And we need to get our house in order. That is scripturally a fact as well. You can't manage within the body of the church unless your house is in the right place. So America has to get its house in order. And the outside forces, which are now actually internalized, and something Vivek said last night about the greatest threat being Chinese communism, China and Russia are mortal enemies. They are, to a degree, working together, but that's on a foreign stage. But it's not, because actually their goal is to destroy America internally, and they are succeeding in accomplishing that. We're fighting a deep state battle, and you talked about the globalists. That's certainly part of the role or a part of what we're fighting. I would suggest there's probably four, maybe five elements that we're fighting today. We're fighting a deep state. We're fighting a deep state with a communist ideology. We're fighting external communism in the form of China. We're fighting an imperialist battle against Russia. And we're fighting the ideology of Islam. All of those are working to destroy America because they understand that they can't take over and they can't run the world if America is in it.
Well, I certainly believe that America has external foes, and I certainly think that some foes are more pressing than others. And I certainly think that above all other threats right now, China is the biggest threat to American national security. Having said that, I still don't really embrace the interventionist worldview because, you know, yes, America has always had threats, going all the way back to the presidency of Thomas Jefferson and the Barbary pirates that raided our merchant ships, and we had to go down to Libya and bombard their ports because they got a little bit too promiscuous with their desires. So we've always had threats. We've always had people that wanted to destroy our nation because of what we stood for. But that doesn't necessitate, nor does it justify, these sort of roving campaigns that we've done around the world, trillion-dollar-plus excursions, sending our men to die for pursuits that we ultimately knew were fruitless or were based on false pretenses. Let's look at the war of Iraq, which, I mean, if you look at that war of Iraq, there were so many false pretenses. People think that Western weapons of mass destruction was the only thing. No. America had actually had an axe to grind with Saddam Hussein. He used to be one of our guys. But then he stopped doing what we wanted him to do. And like what America normally does when its people betray them, like Gaddafi and all that kind of stuff, we kill them because we can't really control them anymore. But also, if you look at Robert Mueller, who was actually the FBI director at that time, there was actually an effort to get Robert Mueller to say that the anthrax attacks of the early 2000s came from Iraq. And then you had John McCain and others go on national TV and say, yeah, it came from Iraq. which then gave the public, by the way, it didn't come from Iraq, we know that now, but that gave the public even more reason to want to go to war in Iraq. And so I don't believe the government is trustworthy. I think that the American people should have a good, healthy distrust of their government, not extreme, but healthy. And I think that how the government has behaved in manufacturing consent for all of these foreign wars over the past, 20, 30 years should give a lot of us pause before we go to another conflict.
You touch on something that, again, where we lose the constitutional republic perspective of our nation. And that is when, because I agree with you, distrust of government. The problem is that if we truly understood and if we were still educating on what government is supposed to be, as a constitutional republic, we would understand then that there is no such thing as a government acting outside of the will of the people in the United States. Our founding fathers would rise up and say, "You don't have a government anymore. You have tyranny." Period. End of story. And it should have been stopped immediately. And that's why I would go back to what McCarthy was trying to do coming out of World War II, recognizing that tyranny was afoot on our shores at that point. I would suggest that tyranny began with Woodrow Wilson when he sold us out to the League of Nations.
I think that was absolutely a big part of it. The phenomenon that Woodrow Wilson was a part of in the progressive era really stoked this European imported centralization and authoritarianism. It created the administrative state. It created the welfare state. It gave rise to some of the most erosive forces that have ever known American society, that destroyed our spirit of individualism and self-reliance and community, interdependent community, and replaced that with government. I absolutely agree with you. You're 100% right.
And so, unfortunately, there's a great deal that we have to unravel. Rick Manning and I got into this on Monday, and Rick did an incredible job of really kind of trying to help people understand. For example, when we talk about term limits, the problem with the term limit idea is that we're believing then that changing the name on the door is going to change the names of the people in the offices or change the names of the people in the administrative state. Mm-hmm. The administrative state is 7,500 people deep. And unless we eliminate those 7,500 people, we won't change anything.
I agree.
Because the names on the door will change, but what they're fed, even right now, I did a program with Leah Hoops and Gregory Stenstrom on the election fraud, which has been watched by a lot of people. And one of the things that's brought out in there, I sent a text to Jim Jordan and Chip Roy live right here on the show and included Greg Stenstrom in that text, because criminal charges, a criminal complaint, was presented to Jordan's office and to the House Judiciary by Greg and Leah, outlining the criminal acts that took place in Pennsylvania regarding election fraud. Unfortunately, the chief of staff for both of those entities, both Jim Jordan's chief of staff and the chief of staff for the House Judiciary, and the staff have blocked it, and the House Judiciary members have never seen it, and neither has Jim Jordan.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's quite concerning. And look, Vivek is really the only candidate that has spoken now against the administrative state, that understands the dangers of the administrative state. DeSantis has offered reforms, but you can't reform the administrative state. It has to go.
It's got to be wiped out. Absolutely.
It has to go. Yep. The FBI at this point cannot be reformed. The culture there is so corrupt that it has to go. It's been corrupt for a long time, but they're getting even more bold these days. The Department of Education, that shouldn't have existed. That only came into existence about 50 years ago with Jimmy Carter. That shouldn't have existed at all.
But you can go back to Dewey in the 1920s, so it's actually been almost 100 years, which is even more scary to imagine.
The philosophy behind it is much older. And John Dewey and all those people, the philosophy is much older. But the department, that was Carter's baby. And so why do we have that? We shouldn't have that at all. It's not,
The national, it was, again, you know, it's a communist concept. The nationalization of education like that is more of a communist concept than it is an American one.
It is, absolutely. It's an import from Europe, and so we shouldn't have that. We should embrace the principle of subsidiarity.
And here's the tie-in, and I want to give you a chance to talk to this, because this was part of why we were, you know, doing this morning. But here's the tie-in to the whole Georgia indictment. You have a district attorney in Georgia who has decided that Georgia's secretive RICO law, which is on this particular type of RICO law, is only found in Georgia, gives them the right to tell the rest of the country what constitutional rights you have and what constitutional rights you no longer have, including the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment, the ability to defend yourself or to even seek legal counsel.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, 100%. The entire Georgia indictment is rotten to the core, and we can start with the presumptions. The Georgia indictment presumes four things. Trump lost the election in 2020. Trump knows he lost. Trump, despite knowing he lost, acted to overturn a legitimate process that he knew he lost. And then number four, which is even the most absurd part, Trump knows he lost. Everyone in Trump world knows he lost. His surrogates know he lost and also acted illicitly to overturn a legitimate process. Well, if the first premise is incorrect, all other presumptions fail. Mm-hmm. Trump obviously does not believe he lost.
Neither do I.
He does not believe I really don't think he lost either. The more you look into it, this entire system was set up to benefit a particular party. I think that it was rigged by osmosis. It was rigged by changing the rules at the last minute to benefit particular people, to benefit chicanery and trickery. So, but still, let's assume that a reasonable person that does believe Trump lost, look at those set of facts. It's obvious that Trump does not believe he lost. And so if Trump does not believe he lost, it's very hard to get into a conspiracy to do something he didn't believe in the first place. That's the first thing. But also, basic common acts like legal argumentation, political activism, are considered to be criminal acts when they're not criminal acts whatsoever. This is a massive reinterpretation of the law to fit the political goals of Fannie Willis. And I must say, I think this comes, if we want to go back to the progressive era, this comes from this idea called sociological jurisprudence. Most Americans don't know, have never heard it. And I'll explain very briefly about what it means. Sociological jurisprudence was this idea advanced by progressive legal theorists during the progressive era, which eventually made its way through law schools and eventually impacted the thinking of a lot of Supreme Court justices. And it basically says that the law should not be based on first principles. The progressives called it abstract principles. The law should be based on the economic considerations and the plights of particular social classes and social groups, hence the sociological jurisprudence. Now, some people may think this is just an idea whose time has come and gone, but we've seen the impact of this idea in the judicial activism of the past 60 years in the Supreme Court. We've even seen the impact of this idea with Ketanji Brown Jackson and the decision about affirmative action, where she said in her response to Clarence Thomas, just because the Constitution prohibits racism does not mean racism is prohibited in life. Well, I'm sorry, Ms. Jackson, but the Constitution makes no remark about what happens necessarily in everyday life. It makes remark about how government should be run. But the sociological jurisprudence person would tell you what happens in everyday life is more important than the Constitution. And you can easily justify this kind of illicit prosecution if you embrace the sociological jurisprudence framework that so many people on the left have embraced. We have to study our history, know our history, and know what is correct and what is proper in order to confront these kind of events, or else I think we'll just be howling in the wind at something that we know is a problem without an effective means to deal with it.
And when you talk about sociological jurisprudence, you also bring in the idea of social justice.
Yes, 100%.
And the problem, as Elgin Hushbeck has written about social justice, is is that the moment that you put an adjective in front of justice, you no longer have justice.
That's 100% correct.
Justice stands alone on its own merits, and it is a balanced scale. And the moment you put any kind of an adjective in front of it, you've now changed the very definition and the meaning of what it is, and you've skewed it. And I would encourage folks to check out Elgin's book, What is Wrong with Social Justice? It was written a number of years ago, but it really does a great job of explaining why social justice is the problem that you just described.
Yeah, that's absolutely horrible. I'll go even a step further. Not only does it debase justice, but this reinterpretation of justice puts culpability and responsibility on the level of the group, as opposed to letting culpability and responsibility rest in the hands of the concrete individual, which is even more concerning, because we understand where collective guilt leads. We understand where collective responsibility leads. It can, at the very least, lead to a lot of misinterpretations and foul assumptions about your fellow man. At the very most, it can lead to massive executions and genocides and all kind of other things. And if you look at any of the great murderers of the 20th century, a lot of them posed a sort of group blame to before they began executing their political programs. If you look at the plight of Jewish people all around the world, including in Russia, and both in the Tsarist Russia and otherwise, you will see that they were persecuted on the level of group or collective guilt by those in power. In fact, that's actually been the plight of Jewish people for a lot of history. They've been all characterized as one group and then persecuted on that basis. It's foul stuff. It's disgusting stuff. It violates justice, and we have to realize that. But in order to realize that, Americans need to understand what justice actually is, which is why I always we have to go back to philosophy.
Yeah. Well, and as you said, you know, the other piece is that in order for that chaos to be created, there has to be an enemy that they can get the people to focus on and accept. They have to accept a group of people as being the problem. And therefore, they can get everyone's focus and attention on that group of people while they basically build their fiefdom. And that's yes. and they're doing that right now. They're in America, they're doing that with white heterosexual Christians. If you're a white heterosexual Christian, then you are an enemy of everyone, and you're the bad guy.
It's a big part of it, absolutely. And, I think you're right.
And it's all about divide and conquer. And so I'm glad that, you know, that folks like you and I can come together and break that and work to get people to understand the fallacies that are associated with it. Christian, thanks for being with me. ChristianJWatson.com is the website. ChristianJWatson.com. Please follow Christian at that website. Thank you again. Great conversation. I always enjoy our conversations. It's so good to have you with me. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You bet. All right. Luke Macias joins us on the other side. We'll be back with more Chosen Generation Radio coming right up, and we'll be talking with him about the Ken Paxton situation. And is Ken Paxton guilty of something? Did he actually do something wrong? Well, we'll talk about it. Hey, your health is important, folks. I want to tell you, critically important. And that's why I've introduced you to the products that I take myself that have allowed me to have such great blood work. And I want to encourage you to be checking out CGRwellness.com. That's CGRwellness.com. And here's how you can place your order today.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at CGRwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com, coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Hey, this is Pastor Greg. I just want to take a minute to walk you through how to sign up at CGR Wellness. So you're going to type in www.cgrwellness.com. And that is going to take you over here. And the first thing you're going to do is you're going to come over here and you are going to, we're going to shrink this down so it doesn't get in our way. You're going to go right over here to create account. And it is going to offer you the opportunity to create an account. You've got to type in an email address. So we're going to type in an email address. Be good if I put a good one in there, right? There we go. And now, there is a window that pops up. Now, when this window pops up, here's what you need to do. You need to just X out. Just close that window. Okay? Just close that window. Now we go over here, and we'll use a strong password. And then we'll put in our name. And we'll put in our last name. And then we'll put in an address. And the city. And we'll choose our state. And we don't need a phone number. And it wants us to make sure that we're not a robot, so we'll do that. Wow. And we'll create the account. And now the account's been created. Now, there is a share code. I don't remember what it is right now, but it doesn't really matter. Now you'd go over here and type in Vibe. It's your first product you're looking for. And there is the fruit and veggies superfood liquid multivitamin. Click on that. And you're going to order, I recommend that you order two, and I'll tell you why. If you order two of them and add those to the cart, now here comes the cart. Now, you're going to get your second bottle for half off when you type in Chosen Gen Radio. Chosen Gen Radio and click apply. And that's going to give you $20 off. Plus, you're going to unlock free shipping. So now when you get your order, you'll get no shipping charge, 2 months worth for the price of a month and a half. And then you can go back over and you can securely check out, put in your billing information and so on, and you're off to the races. So that's how you do it. Nice and easy. Again, cgrwellness.com. When that little window pops up, just X out of it. You don't need that because you're going to get a $20 discount. Once you completed the form and created the account, go to the top, click in Vibe, and then go. Now, I use Vibe, Resvante, Ultrashot, the EPA fish oil, the Flex, and I also use, this is your apple cider vinegar, and this is your ashwagandha. I use those as well. I'm going to run through this really quick with you. Again, omega-3. And then these products up here. Your Vibe. Your Resvante. The Ultrashot. And the Flex. Those are the ones that I personally use every single day. I can recommend each and every one of those to you and just assure you that they do a great job. They've made a gigantic difference in my health. All right. God bless you. God bless your health. And thank you for supporting our Indian ministry through this as well.
You know you can do your tithing and love offering right from your computer? Visit www.chosengenerationradio.com to support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation. Now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. And it is my sincere pleasure to welcome to the program. And I'm trying to remember if I've had him on the program before. I'm not positive that I have, but he is a very well-known name here in Texas politics and in working on a number of Texas campaigns. And now working with Jonathan Stickland and the development and founding of Texas, of Defend Texas Liberty. I want to welcome to the program Luke Macias. Luke, welcome. Good to have you.
Hey, Greg. Good to see you. I know we've known each other for a little while and yeah. Your involvement in Texas politics. So always fun to reconnect.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to have you with me. Well, my, this Texas politics is a bit ugly, isn't it?
100%. Always has been, and unfortunately, maybe always will be.
It's, you know, it stuns me because a lot of people think, you know, Texas, and they think red, and they think conservative, and they think, you know, all the right values. And unfortunately, even with supermajorities in the House and the Senate, we still really didn't manage to get done what should have gotten done. And now we continue to pay the price for it. Let's talk about what's happened to Attorney General Ken Paxton and this, you know, this continued pursuit of him. What are your thoughts with regards to this, Luke?
Yeah, ultimately, you have a situation where the elected class in the Texas House of Representatives didn't want Ken Paxton to be reelected. They didn't support him. You know, he started his career by running against the Speaker of the Texas House, who's no longer the Speaker, but he just, the institution as a whole has not liked this guy ever since he's been in Texas politics. And so he's one of the most conservative statewide elected officials we have in the state, one of the most conservative attorney generals in the country. And while the Texas Senate is definitely a more conservative body that's moved far more conservative policy, the Texas House continues to be this institution that really opposes much of the conservative agenda of the Republican Party of Texas. And so they decided to probably hope, pray, and tell their donors to oppose Ken Paxton in his reelection campaign. That didn't work. He got elected over three opponents, and then he won in November handily over the Democrat. So they decided, hey, let's just overturn the election. We can get the Democrats to vote for whatever impeachment we come up with, and then we'll bully enough of the people in the Republican caucus. And the truth is there's far more than a couple dozen Republicans that will literally do whatever Dade Phelan tells them to do. And that's just what they're trained to do. They're not trained to think for themselves and calculate each decision on its own and in line with what their constituents believe. So they decided to vote to impeach him. And now that goes to the Senate. That trial starts on September 5th. And the truth is it will overturn an election, which is why I think we have the forgiveness clause in Texas, which says that you can't be impeached and removed from office for something that you did before you were elected. This is even worse than that. This is a bunch of things that Ken Paxton has been accused of for some over a decade that the Texas House has now just decided, well, let's just throw him out of office for it since the voters have decided to keep him there.
Right. Well, and if I understand some of these things correctly, some of this has already been adjudicated. I mean, these are things that have been adjudicated and are over and done and finished, and he was not found guilty.
Well, I will say a lot of them are still in the process. I mean, you could argue that, oh, these are in the court system. And that to me even gives you more reason to oppose the impeachment. For some of these, I mean, there are accusations that were made against him before he was elected as attorney general, but the prosecutors have still yet to actually, prove anything in a court of law.
Right.
Many of them are still doing it. You know, the process is often the punishment in these situations. And so, I mean, he's literally been under some of these accusations legally and in the court system for over a decade. If he's going to be found guilty, find him guilty in the court system, not in some political body.
And again, in a microcosm, this is very similar to the stuff that they're doing to President Trump in relationship to these are they see Ken Paxton as a potential political enemy, and so or as a political enemy, not potential. They see him as a political enemy, and so therefore they are drumming things up to create a situation to try to run him out, and they have essentially succeeded, right? He has been removed, or he has removed himself. He's been removed? Is that how that works?
He's been removed. What happens is literally the second the Texas House actually votes to impeach someone, they are removed from office until the Senate takes up and adjudicates the situation. And so he is no longer the Attorney General of Texas. If the Senate agrees with the Democrats and the Democrats in their own chamber and decide to impeach him, which I don't think is likely, but if they did decide to do that, he would be permanently removed from that office. And then if they vote against the impeachment effort or they fail to impeach him as a chamber, he will be returned to his position as Attorney General. And so he's currently not in office anymore. Greg, you and I have talked for years. I mean, the more liberal Republicans in the Texas House of Representatives, they team up with Democrats to help Democrats gain these legislative victories. And that's why Defend Texas Liberty has been around for the last couple cycles. And you can go to defendtexasliberty.com and just sign up for our email list. You'll literally see that we as an organization are the largest entity opposing the reelection of the worst of the worst Republicans in the Texas House chamber. And if you do the wrong thing, if you team up with Democrats and you work against your constituents, the swamp in Austin rewards you. They send you hundreds of thousands of dollars of financial contributions. You never have to make a fundraising phone call. You're given all the support you need. All these different special interest groups endorse you and tell their members to vote for you. And so there has to be a counterweight to that. And so Defend Texas Liberty exists as that counterweight to go in and actually compete in these areas. Without it, literally candidates would be left to only fend for themselves, raise whatever little bit of money they can raise locally. So we raise money from people across Texas and then go in where those candidates are working hardest and support them in their efforts.
Well, I remember sitting down with Harvey Hildebrand, good grief, 10 years ago, maybe something along that line. And when I was on a local station there in Kerrville and having a conversation with him about what was going on and why with a supermajority at that point in the House and a supermajority in the Senate and a Republican governor, none of the agenda that we had elected them to go and fulfill was taking place. And his excuse to me was, well, we know that eventually the Democrats are going to take back over. And so we're trying to get along with them so we can. I mean, I find it ridiculous that in a supermajority, even in a majority like we have right now, that you give chairships to Democrats who you know are going to kill every piece of policy that the Republicans have been voted into office to accomplish. Every piece.
It really is this perspective. We hear a term used often called managed decline, and many of the Republican elected officials really see that as their job. You know, they're just managing the decline of our state. They're managing the decline of society. They don't really see themselves as leaders put in a specific position to turn us back in the right direction, right? To help restore our land, our soul, our value base, our character as a nation and a state. That's not what they see their responsibility as. And when you talk to them and they're honest to you, like Harvey was at that moment, you realize they see themselves as these stewards managing decline. And they would tell you, well, the Democrats are going to race us off a cliff, and we're just going to kind of edge us closer and closer there every single day. There's a article that a friend of mine, Kerry Cheshire, just published at Texas Scorecard, and Kerry runs Texans for Strong Borders, the largest immigration group here in Texas. And so he wrote this piece about a debate that happened in the Texas House floor just last session, where we were going to create this border council, and it was going to help formulate border policy. And in the bill, it says Democrats get certain seats on the committee. And so Tony got up, Tony Tinderholt from Arlington, state representative, gets up and says, hey, I'm going to amend this bill. I don't want Democrats on this border council. Like, they want open borders. Why would I want them to have a seat at the table here? My constituents didn't elect me to help let Democrats help write our border policy.
Absolutely.
And 50 Republicans of the 86 voted with all the Democrats to keep Democrats in those positions on the Border Security Council. And so you just see this very broken perspective. And I think that that's one reason why we have different conservative candidates stepping up and running and pushing hard.
Well, it also speaks to, you know, I mean, it goes all the way to the top as well, because, you know, I mean, this is one of the challenges that I think we have with our present governor. He's a politician, but as far as principle is concerned, he has not shown any fortitude to maintain any form of principle.
Yep, 100%, 100%. I know even in your area, you know, Andrew Murr, in Kerrville, led the impeachment effort, right? Yep. And I know this is a nationwide deal, but also you have people there in the Texas Hill Country, and this is places that you call home, that other people call home, and Andrew Murr led the impeachment. He secretly led the impeachment. There's been two impeachments in Texas history. I don't know if I'll give you a very brief summary of the impeachment history in Texas. Only two impeachments in Texas history. One in 1975, and it was a district judge in the Rio Grande Valley who'd already been convicted of crimes. A little different than Ken Paxton, the sitting attorney general, just reelected. Also, a bunch of accusations that they haven't been able to actually pin against him by prosecutors or judges. But the only other one was in 1917. Only other time in Texas history they've impeached, and it was a sitting governor. Also, by the way, that governor's wife, Ma Ferguson, ran and was the first woman elected governor right after he was impeached. So clearly that didn't really work about, you know, removing the Fergusons from their political involvement. Also, the original governor, he vetoed UT funding, okay, because they were too progressive or something. I mean, it sounds like a patriot. And so he gets impeached in 1917. I don't know what a progressive professor is in 1917 on UT, but it sounds bad. So these individuals had months of testimony, months of both sides being heard. They literally invited the Texas House to say, if you have any questions to ask the other side, ask them, submit them, and we'll ask them in a public hearing. Andrew Murr leads this secret investigation. Yep. He doesn't ask anybody any questions. None of his committee members ask anybody any questions. Yep. John Smith, he called it hearsay within hearsay within hearsay. They paid people to talk to people who said that other people said something. And then they told the committee these people said those things about what the other people said. Those people weren't put under oath. They gave them a report and they said, this guy should be impeached. So it was handled in a way that showed they didn't want transparency, they didn't want honesty, they didn't want both sides to be heard, and they would just throw this hot potato into the laps of the Texas Senate. And it's one reason why Andrew Murr is being very heavily challenged for his reelection already.
I would have run against Murr if I hadn't been in that accident 6 years ago.
Yes. Yes.
You and I talked about that. I was getting ready to make my announcement, and Ray Myers and Joanne Fleming and a whole bunch of folks had said once I'd announced that they would be helping me with that campaign. But you know, but God has a plan and a purpose for everything. So Andrew Murr has been a disappointment from the very beginning. I sat down with him as well once he was elected, when we selected him over, I'm trying to remember the other gentleman's name that ran against him that year. He went on to work with Texas Public Policy.
Yep. And Murr, could not have done anything he did without the help of the Democrats. He just couldn't. I mean,
Joe Strauss.
Yeah, 100%.
And Joe Strauss, who was already a sellout, and we told Murr that you need to. But the first thing Murr did was hold a reception in his office, hosted by Joe Strauss.
That's right.
And that
these guys get there and they immediately become part of the system.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, for those who say, well, you know, maybe he didn't know better or he didn't understand procedure. Andrew Murr's day job is supposedly a judge, and that should scare everybody. Okay? I mean that sincerely, that should scare every single person listening to this program right now.
Yep.
If Andrew Murr's day job is as a judge,
yep,
and this is the way in which he administers justice, one has to be incredibly concerned about the justice that he's administering in his courtroom.
Yep. It's very sad to watch each and every one of these individuals. They're given a choice. They show up to Austin and they're quickly told, hey, you have to basically bow to this powerful hierarchy that we've created. And it's the speaker and then his powerful chairman. And if you obey our rules over time, we'll give you some more power. And then the only reason we'll give you power is if you promise us that you will yield it the way we want you to yield it when we want you to yield it, which is exactly what Murr did. He waited and waited and waited and was given this powerful position in the General Investigating and Ethics Committee. And then the speaker made it clear, well, I'm only giving you this power if you use it the way I want to use it, as a weapon against my conservative political opponents. And he was willing to do so.
And, you know, when we were pushing for the Freedom Caucus and trying to get the Freedom Caucus, you know, to stand up, and I've been a part of that with Joanne's grassroots efforts a number of times over the course of the last 10 years. There is a way to make a change. I mean, Jonathan Stickland was a leader of that. Kyle Biederman was a leader. There have been a number of individuals who have led that charge. What it takes is it takes the people in those seats holding to principle.
Yep.
All you need, you have the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You have the numbers. I mean, you say, well, we'll give you power. The only reason they hold the power is because they attempt to hold threats over individuals. But the fact of the matter is that numbers still makes the difference. And if those individuals, when they get there, would decide to do the right thing, the numbers, and even to this day, right now, those numbers exist.
Yep.
If they showed up on the first day and they said, we're going to do the right thing in the majority, it wouldn't matter. The speaker and his lieutenant would have no power because you'd vote them out.
Yep. They could do it at any point.
Absolutely.
And it's a mindset that they're catechized into. Matt Rinaldi talks about this. There was a documentary that just came out, the Texas Scorecard release, called The Texas Heist. And, I mean, literally millions of Americans have seen this documentary, watched this documentary, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Texans, maybe over a million Texans. And so it's been really encouraging to see so many people watch, view, and then start to realize that there is something different about the way the Texas House operates. But Matt Rinaldi, who's the current chairman of the Texas GOP, is in that documentary, and he talks about freshman orientation, how when freshmen come into the legislature, they go through this orientation process. They're basically catechized or brainwashed into this idea, way of thinking, and they're shown a Democrat and a Republican, and they get up and tell all the members how much they work together on things and how much they actually don't. It's not like Washington, D.C. or the rest of the area you're out there. None of y'all campaign to say that you're going to work with Democrats a lot, but we work with Democrats a lot, and you can work with Democrats a lot. And if you don't want to, well, then you're just not going to be seen as a team player, which means you're probably not going to get anything done or be on any important committees, and we might just kill all your bills to spite you. That's basically what they're presented. So it takes somebody with a strong will to say, I want to push back against that type of broken system. It's why people like Wes Verdell, who have decided to run against Andrew Murr, and others are stepping up.
And why it's so important for, you know, again, this goes back to we the people. And we the people have to make a decision to stand against these lies and to stand against this this machine that is slowly destroying the state of Texas. And the irony of it, I guess, to a degree is this is exactly what happened to California. I mean, it is 100%. And I came from that 12 years ago, but I'd been here in Texas before. I married my wife is a Texan. That's what brought us back here. And you know, the first thing that happened when I landed after fighting out there for 18 years, was a meeting with a group of pastors where the school administrator said, you can no longer hold the bachelorette at the school if you're going to hand out Bibles. And I just looked around the room waiting for one of the pastors to stand up and say, well, no, you know, and everybody just kowtowed and said, okay, all right, okay. And I thought, wait a minute, I am literally watching the early days of the demise of a free and conservative California. And this was 12 years ago, and it has done nothing but accelerate here since.
Yep. 100%. And that's the really core question of what Texans need to ask themselves. Do they want Texas to be a state that just slowly declines into California, but we just take 50 more years to get there, or 100 more years to get there, right? Yeah. And everyone thinks that it would be silly to think that Texas could become California. I don't think everyone thinks that, but I think for the most part, a lot of people would say, well, I just don't think that's going to happen. And the truth is everyone thinks in very short periods of time, right? Well, so we think of today's society, and we cannot possibly get there. But our universities are teaching DEI. Our universities are teaching critical race theory. Our K-12 institutions are sexualizing our kids. Yep. We're literally creating these mini Marxists while trying to get people to move here and courting these woke companies who are paying for people to get abortions and having ESG policies. And we're slowly trying to transform our state into a different direction if you looked at how the move was going. The truth is that every time Texas stands strong and against the left, liberals flee. When we banned transgender modification, we literally had articles of people saying, I'm leaving the state because I can't chop my kids' genitals off. And you're going, that makes Texas a state that can be preserved and can actually have a conservative movement that grows. And that's one of the things we're focused on at the Defend Texas Liberty PAC and many of the other efforts that we're involved in.
DefendTexasLiberty.com. Luke, this was one of the things. I mean, 10 years ago, I was heading an Oak Initiative chapter here in the Hill Country. And then I broke off and started doing my own group. But I was telling people back then, this LGBTQ agenda is coming. It's coming for your kids. It's coming for the schools. Kerrville had the very first, Tyvee High School had the very first PFLAG group in the entire state before Obergefell, before any of that was going on. And it was led by the retired minister of the Methodist Church in Kerrville. And I started talking about it. And you know what I was told? If you don't stop talking about this, we're going to stop coming to your group because this will never happen in Texas. Well, guess what? Texas is the number one state for child trafficking in the nation, and they're sodomizing more kids in Texas than they probably are anywhere else in the country, which is horrific to think about. but facts are facts, because we've got an open border, and that's what they're doing down there at the border. And it's disgusting, and it's sick. And 10 years ago, we could have been on top of this, and we could have been ahead of this curb, and now we're behind the curb. And it's really sad to see. Luke, I thank you for what you and Defend Texas Liberty are doing. DefendTexasLiberty.com. Get behind these folks. Support what they are doing and support the candidates that they are supporting. We can save Texas, and we need to save Texas. Thank you, Luke, for being here today.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back with more Chosen Generation Radio coming up right after this.
Thanks, Greg.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. I greatly appreciate